You are listening to Wells Tech, episode 573, recorded on October 31st, 2018, Kids and Commerce. Wells Tech is a weekly podcast exploring the intersections of technology and ministry. It is part of the podcast network sponsored by Wells, the Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. Our show today is hosted by Martin Spriggs and Sally Draper. We're also joined by semi-regular classroom technology correspondent Jason Schmidt. The topic of the day is e-commerce, and you might be surprised that we're talking about e-commerce for kids. So stay tuned for that as we continue our review of the book, Faithfully Connected. Lots of news in tech, Wells Now, picks of the week from all three of us, and a Pinterest resource. So stay tuned for all that and much more. Welcome back, everybody, to Wells Tech, episode 573. And joining me, as usual, Sally Draper. Hey, Sally, from Louisiana today.
I am in Louisiana, along with other Wells Techers.
Just barely.
Yeah, across the river from my hometown, Natchez, Mississippi, and I'm camping near Wells Tech regular contributor Jason Winjet and his lovely wife Barb, who happen to be full-time RVers, go figure. And we had the chance to be in the same place at the same time, so what a treat. Today is Barb's birthday, so a special shout-out to Barb Winjet. Happy October 31st birthday.
Nice. So do you trade RV secrets and tips and tricks?
We got to tour each other's RV. What a cool thing is that? And look at Jason's setup. He works full-time from the road as well and has a really neat setup for his desk. We talked about internet on the road, which is just an exciting topic. And yeah, it's cool stuff.
That's neat. Speaking of Jason, we have another Jason joining us today, Jason Schmidt. Hey, Jason.
Hey, Martin. Hey, Sally.
Good morning. Jason
works down there in Omaha, Nebraska, or close to. Is it actually in Omaha?
No. Well, if you're familiar with Omaha, it kind of just sprawls everywhere. But I technically live and work in the town of Bennington, which is just outside of Omaha.
Gotcha. For the Bennington School District.
Correct.
Awesome. And Jason joins us every other month to talk about education and technology. And we lovingly call them, and he and Rachel, our semi-regular classroom technology correspondents. And we actually really look forward to these times when they join us. So thanks for joining us again, Jason.
Yeah, it's my pleasure. Happy to be here.
And we're going to continue a conversation we started last month with Rachel Feld. The book Faithfully Connected, we had a great start last month, and looking forward to our discussion this month. We're going chapter by chapter. The author of the book, actually I don't have it right in front of me. Who's the author of this book?
I have Benjamin Boach and Jacob Holitz, and they published through Concordia Publishing, Missouri Synod folks that wrote this book. With a subtitle, Integrating Biblical Principles in a Digital World.
I've got it open now. I had to light up the old iPad. I've got it in digital format. So, we're going to do a chapter at a time. If you want to follow along, I think it's a worthy book to have, especially if you're an educator or into education at all. As we talked about last week, it's really not just for teachers in classrooms, but I think there's application here for pastors in catechism class as well. So a good book to have in your library, Faithfully Connected. We're on chapter 2, which is entitled Digital Commerce, which at first to me was kind of an odd topic when you're talking about a curriculum for students. But as you read through, this is a big deal and something that I think all of our students need to be educated on and think deeply about and how that all ties in with our Lutheran confession as well. So where do you want to start? What were your insights to the digital commerce chapter, you guys?
Well, I think it's interesting that you said you thought it was an odd topic. I kind of had the same reaction. And I think that's what marketers want us to feel like.
Right.
They want us to just take in all the marketing that's thrown at us. And us, you know, as adults, we get hit by a lot of it. But it's also thrown at our children. And just kind of absorb all that and want everything we see and get marketed about. And I think that's a big point of the chapter. And now that things are online with the internet and shopping is just so easy, you can click buttons without giving it much thought at all and be the owner of all kinds of bells and whistles. So it's convenient, but it also kind of makes us more of a throwaway society and things. It's just too easy almost.
Sure, especially when you can get it in 2 days or less.
Right. Yeah. And one of the things that really kind of stuck out to me as I was reading through it too was, you know, just that whole concept of, you know, when there's like digital goods, like for example, you know, this, I have this book on Kindle, so, you know, I can read it anywhere. I have a device or anything, but I don't have a physical copy of the book. So it's not like, you know, I'm filling up my bookshelf with things like this. And that's, you know, you have so many other things like that as well. You know, we have a Nintendo Switch, and you know, we don't buy physical copies of games anymore. We just download things, and that makes it really kind of
less tangible for sure, right?
That's exactly it. You know, any of these digital goods, and not even just digital goods, but you know, money itself. How much, you know, I don't carry cash anymore. I have a little card that I swipe for everything. So it doesn't just apply, I think, to, you know, our commerce, just, you know, on like Amazon or ordering things online, but just in general, I think as a society have gone away from many of the tangible kinds of goods that we would have seen in a lot of different circumstances.
Yeah. Something I found interesting was that, you know, here we are, three adults talking about this, and you know, it's kind of hard for us to even discern it, but that the generation 20-year-old and under is the most marketed to generation. And I was kind of surprised, but actually it makes sense. What they're looking at these days is that people connect with brands and they feel like they can have one-to-one conversations with the people behind brands and things like that. And so they want to get that brand loyalty from a young age on up. And we can really see that happening in our classrooms as we're adopting Google or Microsoft products to use with students for classroom communication and those kind of things. So that brand loyalty carries on. If they are used to using the G Suite of tools, then they're going to want to use that when they move into the workforce and when they do have more buying power and things.
Yeah, and it goes across all kinds of brands and consumer electronics. You think of Apple products; that's exactly what they're doing. They're raising a generation of people who feel that, you know, that just should be the standard. That comes into the workplace, it's in the home, etc., and it's just an expectation. So they spend a lot of money, and you can tell from the advertising who it's aimed at as well. It's not aimed at me, you know, 50 something. It's truly, you know, somebody much younger. And yeah, it's apparently working.
Yeah, apparently. So the second half of the chapter, after making us so aware of all of this consumerism and marketing and everything, kind of shifts gears and it talks about stewardship. And, you know, right away when I hear that word, I think of, you know, giving to the church, my tithe or whatever it may be that I give to the church. But that's not necessarily the focus they were looking at when they brought up stewardship here. Instead, it was more about self-control and contentment.
Well, yeah, and you know, and that was another really great point that I thought that the authors made with this chapter was just, you know, the fact that you know, stewardship doesn't have to do with your giving, like, you know, that's a part of it, but really what it comes down to is our attitude towards our belongings and everything that we have and control in this world, and how we use those in a way that's God pleasing, because it's not, you know, it's not our stuff, it's God's. So, you know, when we're dealing with those kinds of things, you know, like e-commerce and things like that, how does that impact our relationships with others and ultimately advance His kingdom?
Right. There was a neat quote. He said, "Building the capacity in young people to think before they do anything especially before rushing to spend money, is linked to one of the fruits of the Spirit, self-control. And you kind of think a lot of the fruits of the Spirit apply here, and they all apply to stewardship as well. That is maybe not something that is very well developed in kids and in some, you know, adults too, that the ability to have that self-control is a fruit of the Spirit, and kind of it's not a I need this now because as I want it. There's more to it than that in the mind of a Christian.
Definitely. Another quote I liked was, consumerism tends to promote a certain type of identity and worldview. And, you know, that's just what we're talking about, that you see the world differently if you're focused on things. And then it went on to say, but things do not define us. God does. Possessions are gifts from God. And so it really changes your worldview and maybe makes you want to keep that iPhone an extra year before you trade it in just because they made the announcement of a new one or whatever. It's a different worldview when things are gifts and you want to use them well and not abuse the gifts that God gives you.
Another quote that I highlighted here in my reading was a little bit later on in the chapter, referring to the 9th and 10th commandments, which are certainly in play here. They encourage us not to be swept up in the desire for what our neighbors have, or for what is marketed to us on a daily basis. Instead, we should look for and adhere to God's gift hidden in these commandments, contentment. That self-control, contentment. And 1 Timothy 6:6, godliness with contentment is great gain. And boy, what a lesson everybody needs to learn about that. That really is in direct opposition to kind of the e-commerce society that we live in, right?
Definitely. So, you know, we're down a path. We've maybe instructed our students and helped them to begin to realize some of these things. But there is a side to it where we can encourage them to use today's digital content and easy buying and all the consumerism to serve and to be a good steward in God's kingdom. And that would be just kind of taking a different look at things. The author gives a couple of examples, one of which is a program that we've used through Wells, and I know many churches have, and that is something called Amazon Smile. And I'm sure there's other groups. I think Target has a program where you can sign up your school. And basically, when people buy, then a small portion of their purchase goes to a charitable organization. And in that way, you know, they're supporting with their purchases the different organizations that are signed up.
Yep, Amazon Smile, 0.05% of your purchase goes to that nonprofit of your choice. The Synod has signed up for that. So if you're out there shopping for Christmas, you can go to smile.amazon.com and find us in the little drop down. It says who do you want to designate as your charity, and then anything that you do. And I found nothing that you can't buy through that you can't on the regular site. There's absolutely no reason not to go that route.
Yep, that's exactly right. And if you do sign up for it and you go to the regular site, it'll actually prompt you to say, hey, are you sure you don't want to go to smile.amazon.com to support this organization?
Yep.
Another example they gave was around the thought of going to get new toys or maybe going to a new movie that's come out. Instead of the focus being on the toy or the movie, maybe the focus for you could shift the focus a little with your child to say, who can you share this with? Who would you like to invite to go along or something like that? So there's some kind of a connection to something besides the material object that they're, you know, so desirous of.
As we said, I think last month, there are other resources that go along with each of these chapters. So there is a lesson plan, classroom lesson plan that goes along with us, as well as a discussion guide for catechism. So probably worth the price of the book right there if these are topics that might resonate with your students and you think needs to be in their heads and hearts. This would probably be something to apply here. So exceedingly well done. The the approach they take, a very Lutheran approach, and I think a very, it makes a lot of sense to me to make sure that this conversation happens within the classroom.
And they do have print and Kindle versions, so we'll include links in the show notes if you're interested in picking up the book. You can get it in a variety of ways. Really quick, just push the button. That's all it takes. Yes. Oh, the irony, huh?
Right. Yeah, that's even talked about in the book. You can buy something with just one click. If you've got what's it called on Amazon?
One-click purchase, I think.
One-click purchase. Mm-hmm. I think they've even trademarked that. So, and truly, it is that simple. So, all right, very good. Good discussion. So that is Faithfully Connected, the Digital Commerce chapter we were talking about there. Let's move on to news in tech. Speaking of consumerism and Apple, Apple has launched not a new line of products, but updates to their current line of products. And so they had a big event yesterday, and they launched or announced, at least, I think they're launching next week or available next week, some updates to a couple of their more popular products. One is the iPad. I'll have more to talk about the iPad a little bit later on in the show in my picks, but the iPad is now looking a lot more like the recently released iPhone X products, which has Face ID built into it, so no more home button. It's got a little bit bigger and better screen. The what else was on the iPad Pro? No headphone jack, so that has gone the way of the iPhone as well. It works with a new Apple Pencil and a new smart keyboard. Prices are a little bit higher. The iPad is a little bit thinner, lasts a little bit longer, a little bit faster, you know, all the things that you would expect coming out of Apple with their iPad. So that's what's new with the iPad Pro. Now, that's not the regular iPad, and keep in mind there is an iPad that is kind of marketed at the education market for a lot lower price than the starting price here of $799. I think I mentioned that a couple weeks ago. Also, they have revved their Mac Mini, which was actually a fairly popular product, hadn't been updated in, I don't know, 3 or 4 years. So they've kind of upgraded the internals to that. The Mac Mini is basically a headless computer. You provide the monitor, keyboard, mouse. It's just a little box with a processor in it, some RAM, and some storage, and you do the rest. Actually, not a bad option. I know a lot of schools that actually use those. But it is a little bit more expensive than where the Mac Minis were. I think they're starting also at $799. Kind of an entryway into the Mac ecosystem, if that's something that is appealing. And then finally, the MacBook Air, which hadn't been updated in quite a long time. It was their only laptop that didn't have what they call their Retina screen, so higher resolution screen. So they relaunched that, and that actually looks pretty nice. The screen is improved. The actual form factor, it's a 13-inch screen, got a little bit smaller because they reduced some of the bezels on it. Comes in all kinds of different configurations and very lightweight. I think it's 2¾ pounds altogether, and has a lot going for it. The price did increase on that as well. I think you could get the old MacBook Air for under $1,000. This one starts at $1,200 or $1,199. So pre-orders are out today, and I think all of these are available next week. So that was the news coming out of Apple. We've got an article from The Verge that talks through all these, and a video from, who's the video from? Tech Insider, the whole 2018 event, if you're interested, in 8 minutes. I think it was about a two-hour event. You can watch all the highlights in 8 minutes. There was a bunch of other stuff talked about there as well.
So, Martin, are any of these new devices coming to your desktop anytime soon?
I don't know. The iPad's very intriguing. I like the additional screen size that's available there and the extended battery life. So we'll see.
Mm-hmm. Stay tuned.
I don't know. I'm gonna stick with my 8-year-old MacBook Air and my 4-year-old iPad 2. iPad Air 2. Yep, that's exactly right. I am satisfied and content with the current state of my my technology.
Keeping with the theme. Awesome.
Good job.
Very good.
All right. I have a little news in tech as well, and that's an announcement from our friends at hourofcode.com. Coming up in a very short order, December 3rd through 9th, will be Computer Science Education Week. And right now, you can sign up, you can register an Hour of Code event over at the Hour of Code website. We'll have a link in the show notes. Hour of Code, I can't remember exactly how long it's been around, maybe 5 years or less. And the concept is that they just want to challenge people to engage in at least 1 hour of code during that Computer Science Education Week. They have some really great resources to support you if you are a teacher or run an after-school program or a Pioneers program. Any of that kind of those kind of programs can participate, and they actually have a whole lot of promotion materials, verbiage for posting your events on social media, for emailing out stuff. They have a page full of posters and images that you can use in social media, videos you can share, handouts about Hour of Code, even a sticker sheet that you can print and give people stickers that they participated in Hour of Code. So lots of resources there to invigorate your event, and now's the time to get signed up and be part of the millions of people that will participate in at least 1 hour of coding during the week of December 3rd through 9th. Nice. We have a video to promote that as well. This is kind of video week, but there'll be all kinds of videos that you can make use of in our Wells Tech show notes this week.
The resources that they provide are totally approachable. I think they have in mind the fact that, you know, people are starting from scratch, and mm-hmm. I think these resources aren't good just in a classroom or for a student, but any, you know, an adult as well could get a lot out of these. Jason, do you do anything with Hour of Code in your school district?
Yep, all of our buildings sign up for it, and we run that during Computer Science Education Week for all of our students K through, I think we do a K through 8.
Awesome.
And then a bunch of kids at the high school will also participate. So yeah, we really make a push for it and try to get as many kids as we can involved.
But that's exciting for them. Have you gotten good feedback?
You know, the kids pretty well enjoy it. There have been a couple of times where, like, they do Hour of Code the same time as everybody else on the planet, so it kind of has a tendency to, we have some performance issues with the code.org website. Gotcha. So we actually will have adopted the practice of running Hour of Code the week before CS Ed Week, and then that seems to help with some of those bandwidth issues and
good tip.
Performance issues on the website. So that's worked out pretty well for us, but it hasn't really done much to move the needle as far as curriculum or anything like that within our district. I know it's something that we're working on, but you know, a large organization, it takes time to cause change to kind of be affected.
Okay, good. All right, so that's our news in tech. Let's move on to Wells Now.
Yeah, I wanted to make mention of a new podcast and website blog that we've heard about called Five to Thrive, which is a podcast done by two WLC professors. And I actually don't have their names. Oh, here it is, Dr. Rhonda Wohl and Professor Marty Miller. They share strategies each episode to equip and support educators and parents as they help children develop to their full God-given potential. They recently did a three-part series on the topic of bullying, for example. It looks like they come out with new episodes every Monday, and they are up to their 17th episode so far. It just started at the beginning of summer this year, so over summer and now into the school year. It says our primary objective is to synthesize the research on the brain and learning and provide applicable strategies in answering the question, what does this mean in my classroom or home? So geared toward teachers and parents, we'd welcome your feedback. If you've listened and have insight into the podcast, please share more about it. But we're excited to see this new entry in the podcast spectrum for Lutheran parents and teachers.
Awesome. Great to see that stuff. All right, let's move on to our picks of the week. Jason, you want to hit lead off here for us today?
Yeah, I'd love to. So, in keeping with my my theme for my upcoming Wells Tech conference presentation, which I think that's this summer, isn't it? Is that going to be kind of a big deal?
So
one of the concerns that we have in our district in particular has to do with student data and privacy and how we manage those manage that information legally and responsibly. So I want to talk about the Student Data Privacy Consortium. It is a national organization made up of stakeholders, vendors, school districts, state departments of ed. The Nebraska Department of Education is actually in the process of joining this consortium as well. And what they are, what they mean to do is review the terms of service and the way that companies handle student data, and then turn that information into sort of a clearinghouse that people can go back to and make use of that. And then they also, there's some advocacy that they do, as well as, just a lobbying with lawmakers and with companies that provide these services to make sure that we're handling student data responsibly. So I put a link in the show notes to where you can go through to find things that have been reviewed. And, you know, obviously there's the disclaimer on there that, you know, I'm not a lawyer, so don't take this as legal advice or anything like that. But some of these services have been reviewed by attorneys for school districts and do have a sign off or a sign on kind of a thing with some of these. So great resource for anybody who is interested in making sure that they are doing the right thing with student data and kind of not playing fast and loose with information that we really shouldn't be.
Excellent. Very good.
Nice.
Topic. Very timely.
Yeah.
So we'll look forward to your presentation. You mentioned you're going to be at Wells Education Technology and Leadership Summit happening next summer in Wisconsin, Dells, Wisconsin, June 25th through 27th. And Jason, you're actually part of our planning team, so we are working you hard getting the conference all put together, and it's shaping up nicely. I'm very excited about it.
Hey, I wouldn't do it if I didn't love it.
Registration will open in December, I'm thinking, right?
Right, and you can learn more at wellsedtechlead.com. We'll definitely be announcing registration very soon, so exciting times.
Sally, what do you got?
Well, I am very excited to share something I learned about through my friends at Make. You guys have heard me talk about Make Magazine, and MakerShed is a place where you can buy different project kits and things. They also sponsor these Maker Fairs, and I was privileged to go to one this summer. It was just an exciting event where people are making all kinds of things, and one of the major topics of discussion is electrical things and doing things with electricity. And so teaching the concepts behind electricity can be a bit challenging because it requires materials that can be expensive. And what was demonstrated at World Maker Faire in New York last month was something called scrappy circuits, which is a very, very affordable way to teach the concepts behind electronics. And you can learn more. We'll have a link in the show notes. They have a Google site up right now, and very soon they're going to have a regular site at scrappycircuits.com. But right now they're using a Google site, so we'll throw that link out there. And the concept is that you can go to your local dollar store. I went to Dollar Tree last weekend, bought a few basic things. Their initial set of electronics is built with a little small tea light, electrical tea light that has a battery inside. And you can get those two for a dollar at the Dollar Tree. And a bit of cardboard and some binder clips, those black binder clips with the two silver sides to them that close. And with those basic materials and a little bit of connectivity. They give you different ways where you can build your own kind of alligator clips to connect and keep the circuit between the different things you're building. We actually bought some wire at the local hardware store, and you just attach that to paper clips. So instead of alligator clip-ins, you have paper clips that you clip on to the things, and you can actually complete circuits. I'll include a link in the show notes where we made the T-Lite LED connected to one set of cardboard and binder clips light up because it was connected using these alligator clips to the battery that was on another cardboard component of the electrical circuit. And so kids can actually build these themselves in the in a classroom setting, in a teaching setting, and really for probably about $1 per kid, you can have a set of these basic scrappy circuits to build out different concepts in electricity. It's super easy to do. We sat down at our table and did it in a very short period of time, and a very good learning tool. And the website actually links to different multi-packs of this kind of stuff, so you can get started from the Dollar Tree, but you can also order from Amazon for even less expensive. It says on the website that teachers can build a classroom set that kids can easily take home for around $20. So that price point is amazing given the normal cost of electronics out on the web when you're searching for these kind of things for a classroom experience. So I'm very, very excited about Scrappy Circuits, and I think it's just beginning. They're just getting the word out. Like I said, they were at this World Maker Fair, and so they got a lot of publicity and a lot of interest in the concepts, and I'm excited to see where it goes from here.
Boy, sounds like a real reasonable way to get hands-on.
Yeah, nice. Definitely.
Okay, let's go to my pick then. And last Saturday, I was honored to be asked to speak at the Men of His Word Conference held in Rochester, Minnesota. And I was speaking on harnessing the power of technology without it having harnessed you. So obviously there are dangers in using technology, especially social media, but many blessings and value to it. But one thing that I wanted to try and do for this particular presentation was to use, speaking of iPads, use my iPad and present from the iPad wirelessly and use PowerPoint. I had never used PowerPoint on the iPad. I had used Keynote a few times, and I had used Google Slides a little bit, but never used PowerPoint. So I just decided to try that, and it was really a pleasant experience. The iPad app, the PowerPoint iPad app, is very well done. Has all the same features as if you were working really on a desktop. You have the ability to have a speaker view, speaker notes, annotations. Those kinds of things are all built right in. So my pick of the week is actually a set of training videos I ran across, training videos for PowerPoint for iPad, nicely done by Microsoft. It's on the Microsoft Office site. Just short little clips of all the things that you can do, selecting, printing, saving, email attachments, files, running the slideshow, projecting the slideshow to your screen. Just a kind of a nice quick tutorial. Wouldn't take you more than 10-12 minutes to go through all of these videos if you're interested in using PowerPoint on the iPad. One of the reasons that I wanted to use the iPad was for portability and connectivity through the Apple TV that I could connect to there, and then also to use it kind of as a digital whiteboard with the Apple Pencil, which worked really well. So nice options, presentation options abound at this point if you're using some of these portable devices, and it was worked out really well. So I wanted to make that my pick of the week, and these training videos I think will help you along the way if you're interested in doing something like that yourself.
Excellent.
Those are our picks of the week. Normally we have a ministry resource next, but once a month we are actually renaming that to our Pinterest resource of the month. And I think, Sal, you must be bringing that to the table because I know it's not me.
Jason? A little method. A little thought went into this, and that what we found, or what we've what we understand is that teachers are a primary user of Pinterest. Yep, so we thought on this EdTech focus show that we would focus a little on Pinterest each month for our teacher friends in the audience. And we actually found an article, we'll include a link in the show notes, to 32 practical ways to use Pinterest as an educator. And there are lots and lots of ideas. I'm sure I'll be harvesting things from this article over the next several months. But a couple that I wanted to mention for teachers specifically, and I found some boards to link to, are to search for ideas for classroom decor or decorations. I know my children were in some really amazing classrooms where the teachers just put their heart into the decorations around a different study themes or times of the year or whatever it is. And there are lots and lots of ideas for this kind of thing out on Pinterest. So check out the classroom decoration board. This particular one has 748 pins and 42,000 followers. So I think it's a really great one to start with if you're looking for decoration ideas. The other one that I thought we'd mention today is using Pinterest to search for free printables. And this is a really neat thing. I really love printables. I actually have a board, personal board, that I have all kinds of printables on, but not all of them are education focused. This is things that you can print and make use of in your classroom. They have examples like back to school bingo cards or a Candygram printable, or some of them are teacher appreciation focused, different things that you can use in your classroom, pencil alphabet and numbers, where you can hang up the ABCs in a pencil format. Super cute. And it goes on and on. So worksheets and things like that that you can print to make use of in your classroom. And all of those kind of things are out there and linked to. I would guess that most of them are free to download and make use of. So check out the free printables for school and teacher board. And just keep in mind that you can use Pinterest to search for those kind of things as well. So if you're looking for something to print around a particular subject you're studying or whatever, Pinterest is probably a great place to look for that. One more tip from the article that I thought was really interesting. There's a whole section of this 32 practical ways to use Pinterest dedicated to using Pinterest with your students in a classroom environment. And they suggest that you use something called secret boards. So as you're creating a board on Pinterest, you can indicate that it's going to be a secret board. And that means that other people aren't searching it and finding it, that it's not displayed. If they look at your personal boards, they don't see that board listed. And you can actually give people access to it secretly. So the idea would be that you could add your students to a board that you were using for a particular study unit or throughout the school year or whatever, where you can you and your students can pin together different things that you find as you do various research or whatever. So I thought that was a great tip as well. And like I said, you can count on more Pinterest tips throughout this season of Wells Tech as we kind of hijack ministry resources for the EdTech shows.
I don't mind. I'm coming to see the value of Pinterest. Not that I use it a lot, but I certainly see that, I look at my wife in particular. She's an art teacher. She uses it all the time for her work in the classroom. So good stuff.
Maybe we'll have her make some recommendations for art resources. Sure, that'd be a great idea. Listen up, Debbie.
All right. Let's move to community feedback. I wanted to start out with a note that went through our Wells Tech Google groups. That is just one way to connect with us. If you go to our homepage, wellstech.wells.net, there is a link up on the upper right to our Google groups, which used to be a listserv. We changed that over to Google groups, and it's actually a very popular board. We probably get some kind of question on there every week. And this one comes from Cindy Krieger. She says, I think this might interest some Chromebook users. Free webinars from EASI, which is Equal Access to Software and Information. Chromebook accessibility on Thursday, November 1st at 11 Pacific. That would be one central. There is going to be a webinar. Chromebook computers come, here's a description. Chromebook computers come with a variety of accessibility features built in, such as the Chrome Vox screen reader, different types of magnification, braille support, and more. Join Laura, the Chrome and Chrome OS Accessibility Program Manager, to learn about the various features and functionalities built into Chrome OS so that you can help to make that your experience, or she can help make your experience more accessible and productive. So good, good tip. And that's not something that would immediately spring to mind unless you had a student who had some of those accessibility needs. So this would be something you'd want to tune in for especially. So thanks, Cindy, for sharing that.
Yeah, those accessibility options on Chromebooks are pretty, pretty cool. And I actually use a bunch of those when I'm presenting with a Chromebook. Rather than, you know, like some of the visual things in particular.
For magnification and such.
For magnification and that kind of thing. Yeah, I use those really frequently. So that's I have something going on. I wish I could go, but somebody attends and takes some good notes, because I'd be interested to see what she's got to say.
I would normally think they record those even for viewing later. I don't know. I'd hope so.
Yeah, probably.
Okay.
Yep.
Jason, you've got something that you wanted to share here.
Yeah. So I've been working with a company. It's actually the founder is from Omaha. He went to one of our area schools. But the company is called Root Robotics. And they make this little hexagon robot. It's got wheels on the bottom, and it has a powerful magnet. You can actually put them up on the wall on a whiteboard. And you know, it's got a slot on there for a whiteboard marker and things like that. And you code them using an iPad. They're super cool. We've been having a lot of fun with those with middle school students and some elementary kids here too. But you know, if you're looking for kind of a new kind of coding kind of platform, I did send out a tweet about it with something that one of our a couple of our kids did on the Wells Tech hashtag. But yeah, it was super cool little piece of equipment, and you know, they're kind of more expensive than you would see for something similar. They're about $199 a piece, but you know, for what you get and what you can do, they really are a lot of fun and an engaging tool for us to work with kids. So I was happy to be able to share that.
And what was the site again?
RootRobotics.com.
RootRobotics.com. Awesome.
Yep.
Cool.
Yep.
Looks very cool.
Oh, they're fun.
I also came across the other day, I tweeted out an article from Church Tech Today. It's a site that I frequent fairly often and definitely follow them on Twitter. They had an article, a blog post on using technology in preaching to reach every learning style. Just kind of a short little article with some tips about some technologies you may want to consider augmenting the preaching experience. And one thing I like about this article is it talks about different ways to kind of take some of the hard work that you put into that sermon preparation and spanning it, you know, a little bit longer than just that, you know, 20 minutes, 15, 20 minutes on Sunday morning. Because you've done a lot of research potentially, and you've got other resources that you couldn't fit in or didn't feel that it was that would fit into the flow of the sermon. But there's different other tools, online tools, from video to podcast to blog, that you could use to stay connected with the with your congregation throughout the week, or even leading up to the sermon to better prepare them for them. It talks about things like Facebook Live, texting, even online conversations. Just got all kinds of good suggestions here. I think if you want to kind of use technology in your preaching, not just for, you know, showing visuals or those kinds of things, but all kinds of other things that you might want to consider. So, good article. We'll put in the show notes.
Excellent. And I'm going to complete the tweet trifecta, because I tweeted this week as well. We all have tweets to share. The article that I tweeted was about the Music Modernization Act and your church. It's from our friends at Christian Copyright Solutions. And these folks are really on top of copyright and licensing for all different church-related activities. And this is interesting and very timely. It's been a couple of weeks now since President Trump signed signed into law the Music Modernization Act, and I really didn't know what that meant exactly. So this article gives you a little bit of background on what it means, and it also focuses on the three important takeaways that churches should be aware of. And bottom line, you can go read the article, but it's not a huge concern for us at this point. It may, over time, lead to a little more licensing fees and things like that, but it's not going to be anything that happens real quickly. And when it does, it's going to be to the benefit of the artists who truly are producing the work. I think one of the major focuses was that independent artists weren't necessarily getting paid for their work like they should. And hopefully through this act, the proper fees will be going to the proper people rather than getting lost in the process. So yeah, give the article a read. It maybe it'll take you 5 minutes, but it'll make you feel more aware of the issues around the new law and how it might affect your church, if not now, but perhaps in the future.
Nice find.
Yeah. We also had a couple of people reach out to us with questions this week, Martin, and I always feel like when one person asks, there's a lot of people behind the scenes who are thinking the same thing, so it's worth sharing the information that we put together. First of all, we heard from Pastor Timothy Blauert, who serves at Redeemer in St. Croix Falls and St. John's in Centuria, and he wrote saying, sadly, that they lost access to their church web domain, apparently. And one thing I recommended right off the bat was something called the Wayback Machine or the Internet Archives, because you can potentially see a snapshot, at least, of websites from the past, which might be helpful if you're trying to start over from scratch, like Pastor Blauert's going to have to do, and recreate a site. You know, you put a lot of thought into what was out there in the past and you lose it all without having any backup or whatever, then you perhaps can be fortunate enough to find information on the Wayback Machine. And I'll include a link to that in our show notes. I think it's just archive.org/web. I mentioned to Pastor Blauert that while Wells does have a relationship with Final Web, I think we've been working with Final Web since about 2005, perhaps.
Yeah, it's so at least a dozen years. Yeah,
very long-standing relationship. You'll be able to meet Brian Schaefer, the man behind Final Web, one of the leaders there, at our Wells EdTech Lead Conference next summer. Brian will be there leading pre-conference and sessions on Final Web software. We have a set of resources that we've put together in the past. We haven't done it in several years and offered training ourselves, Martin, but those resources are still out there, and I'll include a link to those. Final Web actually has a brand new version. They're calling it Final Web 2.0, and you can see more about that on the Final Web YouTube channel, and I'll throw a link out there. In particular, they just recently published a brand new video titled Build a Church Website in 5 Minutes. So if you want to look at the Final Web 2.0 features, that's probably a great video to start with. Again, another video to share on this week's show. So
just wanted to make a comment. This is not an uncommon request that we heard from Pastor Blauert, that they've lost access to their website or don't have control of their own domain. Really important to think about that from the get-go. It's great that a member might volunteer to start this up and get the domain and whatever, but don't let them put the authorizing credentials in their own name or in their own account. Have that centralized somehow in the church office or school office or something, so that you will never lose access to your site or lose access to your domain. You need to be in the driver's seat on that. So you may want to check that now. Ask whoever it is that's managing your website if that is all taken care of. But really important. It's probably been more than 10, 15 conversations I've had on this exact same topic. So take care of that.
Yeah, that's a sad day when that kind of thing happens. It really is. All right, one more question that we got from a listener, this time through our Facebook channel. So nice to see people reaching out there. This is from Lee Webster. She said she had done some searching for information on Salesforce, which is an online database product. They want to use Salesforce,
for contacting new visitors and prospects with different tasks of the process assigned to different people in the congregation. So she's basically just trying to ramp up her understanding of how Salesforce potentially could help them in that situation. And the one thing that I think the most detail that we've gotten on people using Salesforce in that way was back at Wells Tech Conference 2015 when Pastor Dan Bondo from Grace in Milwaukee walked us through a Salesforce presentation as part of our Ignite event. And so I was able to find that live streamed video, an archive of that video of him speaking, and pointed her to where his presentation was at that event, and I'll include that video in our show notes today as well. So if you're interested in learning more about Salesforce, that's something that would give you a little bit of an overview of how Grace Downtown Milwaukee is using it.
Very good. And Sally, remind everybody how they can contribute to their own self to community feedback.
Oh, how, there are so many ways. I guess the best thing to do is head over to our website, wellstech.wells.net, where you'll find links to us on Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest, Instagram. Feel free to reach out on any of those social media platforms to us with comments or hashtag WellsTech. There's also a link there, and you can always email us at wellstech@wells.net. And you can even send us a voicemail if you head over to the website. Along the right margin, you'll see a blue tab that allows you to record a message and send us a voicemail. And we would absolutely love to hear from you in any of those ways.
Very good. Speaking of videos, we do have a video of the week.
Kind of anticlimactic after so many videos, but
this one's
really fun. It is. It's the history behind Control-Alt-Delete. What an awkward and interesting combination of keys that we use if we need to reset our computer or on Windows 10, just get to the screen where we can lock the screen or whatever. And this is the story behind it. Not exactly glamorous, but it is an interesting and fun story. And the guy that created Control-Alt-Delete created a whole lot more important things about the PC in its early days, but this is the one he's known for. So it's a fun story and a well put together video, short little history lesson for you on computers.
Many of us have muscle memory for just where those Control-Alt-Delete keys are.
True that.
Yep, that's exactly right.
All right, we're going to do this all again next week for episode 574. And as I mentioned in the show, I did a seminar last Saturday for Men of His Word Conference in Rochester called Harnessing the Power of Technology Before It Harnesses You. So we'll just be hitting a couple of the highlights. There were some interesting conversations around that, so I thought I'd share that presentation with our Wells Tech audience as well, and talk about the good side, the bad side of technology, and some resources that will help you along the way. So that's going to all be next week. Jason, want to thank you again for joining us. Always a pleasure having you.
Yeah, happy to be here. Thanks for continuing to let me come on.
Oh, our pleasure. Not a problem whatsoever. And Louisiana Sally, thank you for your contributions as well.
See you next week.
We'll talk to you next week, as well as all of you. Thank you for joining us. Really appreciate you tuning us in, and share with those people you know that might benefit from our conversations as well. We'll see you soon. Bye-bye.